this edition of the Hagmann and the Hagmann Reporter. We have a gentleman which I guarantee you, you're going to learn a lot from, Chris Martinson. He's the founder of Peak Prosperity. Visit, well, go to HagmannReport.com and in the show notes, look for the old time radio. Always do this. Look for the old time radio or look for to the, John spends a lot. John Robertson spends a lot of time describing the show.
PeakProsperity.com is the website.
Yeah.
If you go to Hagmann Report, it's under, as you said, the old radio.
Yep.
Also for tonight's show, right up, Peering Into the Darkness, the guest information, the bio and website and all the information is, right in there, links to his book. As well as many other important pieces of information.
Before we bring him on, readymaderesources.com, Robert Griswold talking about night vision and communications. Essential stuff. First time out, first time with us. Look, we have a tendency to focus on one thing, and at least that's my view in preparation, and not really look at the entirety of the situation. Get blinders. And communications, I've got to tell you, a weak point. When I say communications, I'm talking about person to person at ground level. Now, we have satellite phones. That's something different. But I'm talking about team communications and night vision. Visit readymaderesources.com, readymaderesources.com for night vision, for communications, for team communications, or the handheld radios. Don't go to Best Buy or whatever, or Kmart, or if they're still around, go to readymaderesources.com. And I just want to say thank you and welcome to the family on, welcome to the Hagmann Hagmann Report, Robert Griswold. And you can call him too. If you have any questions, you can call him. The number is on the screen,
800-627-3809. That's 1-800.
With his eyes.
627-3809. With us this hour is Chris Martinson. He's got a PhD from Duke and an MBA from Cornell. He's an economic researcher and futurist specializing in energy and resource depletion and is the co-founder of PeakProsperity.com. Chris, welcome to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be on.
Well, it's great to have you, and you got a fantastic background. PhD from Duke and an MBA from Cornell. That's you've been very busy.
I got those two. No, I don't. Wow. Okay. So you're not someone. I mean, this is not just. This is based in knowledge. So okay. Chris, if you don't mind me calling you that, or would you like doctor?
Chris is fine.
Okay.
Chris is feels great.
All right. What's going on out there? And this is such a there's so much going on with respect to the news, the headlines. I mean, whether it's Syria, North Korea, whether it's Russia, the economy, domestic problems, the economy, it all comes down to money. All wars are bankers' wars. Everything, the economy. Did I say the economy? You get the idea. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, what all my background tells you is that I'm a curious guy. I like data. I will not stop until I've dug through everything that's available. Let me start here. Almost everything that's being presented to us in the news, in the media, is wrong. It's either flat-out lies, it's very misleading, it lacks appropriate context. Most of it is really designed to help people just feel better for the moment. And let me... So one of the things I get to do, I have this crazy message which takes the economy, energy, environment, puts them all in one spot. There's big stories to be told in each one of those three E's. Listen, I get the great honor to be able to take that story to pretty diverse audiences. And one, I've probably spoken in the audiences I've spoken to this year, there's probably been about $1 trillion under management, right? These are very big family offices, foundations, private equity firms, hedge funds, and pension funds, right? So these are pretty well-connected people, and I got to tell you that what they're consuming and what they understand to be happening and how worried they are is in no way mirrored by what you're going to read in the Wall Street Journal or in the New York Times. That stuff is retail-level information ready to keep you in a certain mindset. It's kind of like, you know, I work with people, I have the opportunity as well, who have a lot of, since you mentioned the night vision, a lot of people with deep special forces background. Just ask any one of them at any time, like, did anything you were ever involved with ever, like, make it accurately into the newspapers back home? They're like, oh, no. things are always different than they're sold. So people are being sold a bill of goods. It kind of annoys me a little bit how cheap it is. If this is happening with respect to the Syria situation right now, with Russia generally, Putin specifically, with respect to the stock market, all of this. You know, and here's a simple statistic that I think sort of drives this home, right? You get Janet Yellen. She comes out and wrings her little grandmotherly hands and says, oh, we're so concerned about this wealth gap that's arising. And I'm like, Janet, shut up, stop. You created it. You made it. Own it. You know, wear it proudly. Don't come out and tell us you're confused by it, right? And here's the statistic that goes with that. In 2015, Oxfam runs a report and finds out that 62 people have as much wealth as 3.5 billion people. This is a crazy asymmetry. Well, they reran the study in 2016, and that number went down to 8. Now 8 people have as much wealth as 3.5 billion. Did they suddenly become super productive individuals? No. The central banks printed money. They dumped it into the markets, and it went to a very small group of people. Janet, stop wringing your hands. Congratulate yourself. Nice pat on the back. This was your work. But it's not good work, and it's people need to understand something, which is the Federal Reserve, for instance, is not on their side and is an institution that does not create wealth, but they redistribute it. Like, if you love communism, you love the Federal Reserve because it's taking from the many and giving to the few without anybody voting on it and without anybody having any voice in it. That's really what the Federal Reserve is. It's not a hard story to understand, but it's never told in our media. So when I bash the media, it's both sins of omission and commission. You're like, what didn't they tell you? And what did they tell you wrong? And boy, you could make a full-time career out of that. But I don't. As soon as people have enough information to go, this whole thing's a little off kilter. What do I need to do? That's the conversation I'm more interested in having.
Wow. Okay. Well said too. And you know, everything we're being told, at least 90% anyway, in my view, with respect to the media, is a lie. And I believe it's a deliberate lie. The lies are contemptible, by the way, and they're keeping information from us. Our guest is Chris Martinson, Dr. Chris Martinson. He's got a PhD and MBA, economic researcher, futurist as well, specializing in energy and resource depletion. His website, peakprosperity.com. He's the founder of Peak Prosperity. I gotta take a lesson in talking. But okay, so we're. I love it, Janet Yellen. You own it. Own it. Own it. That's right. But it's not just her. I mean, it's a whole litany of people besides her and previous to her. So everything changed with going off the Bretton Woods back in 71, I suspect. And of course, since that time and previous to that, since the creation of the Federal Reserve. So. Okay.
Well, yeah, so if I could expand on that, because a very important point to be made here. You know, everybody alive who's in power has basically been alive when we've been off Bretton Woods since August 15th, 71. Mm-hmm. And so we think this is just how the world works. But if you look at a chart that shows income, which is gross domestic product in this case, and it's a little line that just sort of trundles up like this, and then you look at debt in that same chart, and it just skyrockets, right? And so we've been compounding our debt at twice the rate of our income for about 45 years now and pretending like this is totally okay, right? Dick Cheney came out and said deficits don't matter, and there's all this movement afoot to convince us that debt is good, right? And they've been driving people into debt, student debt, auto debt, housing, you name it, because that system works great for the banks. They don't like people keeping money at the bank. They like people borrowing from the bank. But we've been borrowing at twice the rate of income growth. And look, it's this simple. You don't need a PhD in macroeconomics. By the way, I don't. I'm not an economist, but I play one on the internet. But it's this simple. If you yourself can't have your credit card debt growing at 10% a year while your income's growing at 5% a year without running into a math problem, it means two of us can't do that without running into a math problem, which means 10 of us will have the same math problem, which means all 320 million of us in the U.S. will have that same math problem. That's what broke in 2008. That's it. Our credit cycle couldn't run anymore, and instead of facing that, which would have been painful, and guess what? Citibank bondholders would have had to lose money, and AIG shareholders would have had to lose money. Instead of facing that music, the Federal Reserve swooped in and said, we're going to buy all this up, we're going to work with Congress, we're going to come up with TARP, we're going to dump billions, if not trillions of dollars in, we're going to bail out foreign entities, whatever it takes. We just don't want a correction, because the correction is going to be bad. Well, it would have been bad, but now it's going to be worse, because all that's actually happened since 2008 is every single statistic that is a risk factor got worse. Sovereign debt is higher. Individual debt is higher. Corporate debt is off the charts. You name it. And the name of the game has been accumulating more debt, but there's a math problem, which is you can't grow your debt faster than your income forever or even very long. And so it's as simple as that. They're trying to sustain a broken system because nobody in power wants to be the person who has to say this stuff while they're in power. So it's the proverbial can kicking. But here's why I get upset about this. First, we're absolutely destroying the future that the next generations might have. We're leaving them an absolute bag of you know what. And that to me, that's out of integrity. That's a bad thing to do, right? And the second thing is that we're also now created a situation where if the financial markets do correct, we're falling from such a high height up. Imagine we're on an extension ladder. We could have fallen off of 10 rungs up. It would have been painful, but now we're 20 rungs up. Now it's a little dicey. Are we going to survive this or not? That's my concern. And so everything the Federal Reserve has done with other central banks, so this is Bank of England, European Central Bank, Bank of Japan, they've all been doing the same thing, which is, oh, if we could just pretend, and maybe this will fix itself. Well, if it was going to fix itself, it would have by now. It hasn't. The only fix to this is rapid economic growth. That isn't here. No signs is showing up. So now we have more debt than ever and even less growth to service it. And so that breaks at some point. And when it does, my prediction is absolute chaos in the financial markets. Absolutely, it's going to be really ugly. All because they didn't understand simple math at the Federal Reserve. It's a tragedy. It's a crime. It's unfortunate. It's negligent. However you want to characterize it, it's really, I think, unfortunate that we are in this situation at all.
Do you think that it's more than negligence, that this is by design? And I say that to looking in the future and in a number of trends to a move towards a cashless society, to also the ushering in of a new type of financial system, whether that's a global, an international or global system that is moved away from the U.S. dollar. Do you believe that if we do have some sort of correction or, you know, implosion of the economy, that they would try to use that as an opportunity to move towards a different type of system?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, you know, I part of my career was working in strategic management in big companies. And when I ended my corporate career to start a blog, so, hey, don't ever ask me for career advice, right? I'm not that guy. I was working strategy, you know, and every company has a strategy. Pepsi knows how they're going to beat Coke. Monsanto knows what they have to do about Bayer. GM knows what they have to do about Ford, right? And they're very good. These are smart people. They sit down and they think it through. I think it's a complete non-starter to imagine that people who work in government just fail to think ahead or that there aren't plans at the IMF for what they're going to do when scenario A, B, or C happens. Of course they have these plans. Whether they can implement them or not, that's another question. But there's no question in mind that they have these plans, and some of them we've seen. Yes, they have plans for how they're going to move to a cashless society if this or that happens. We've seen the plans. But can they pull it off? That's an open question. So maybe, but maybe not. But if not, that's where you know, really the work of peak prosperity comes in, because it's kind of like, well, we can all hope that somehow they've got a plan that's going to work, but if they don't, and by the way, I don't think the chance of them actually having this work is almost zero. It's very small. Other people have different assessments.
Okay.
Well, if it doesn't work, what do you do?
Well, so what is peak prosperity? I suppose I should ask it this question, or at this point, the question at this point. Peak prosperity. Well, what is that? In other words, maybe I should revise my question. With what you, let me take everything back here and restart again. What do you see? Well, define ugly, for example. When you said things are going to get ugly, chaos and such, define that. What do you see playing out? And then with peak prosperity here, what are we talking about in terms of circumventing or being able to duck and get out of the way of what's coming?
Sure. So we got a taste of ugly back in 2008, and I think it's going to be even more bitter of a taste this time. So let's review. In 2008, things were so dicey that there was that one article in the Wall Street Journal talking about a bank CEO who was walking to an emergency 2 a.m. meeting back in August 12th, I think, walking through the marble lobby on his New York bank, going up to the super secret meeting, and this gentleman stops at the ATM and pulls cash out because he himself is unsure if anything will be operating the next day or if even he'll be able to get cash out of his bank. He doesn't know, right? And we came this close to a complete financial meltdown in 2008, a couple hours away, according to the memoirs of Mervyn King, who was then governor of Bank of England, Hank Paulson. They both said, yeah, it was this close. So what does a financial meltdown mean? Well, it means the banks stop operating. Nobody knows who owes whom what. The derivative structure has collapsed so that you can't really unravel it. So Bank A won't trade with Bank B. Everybody sort of locks their doors. Capital can't flow across borders. I mean, it freezes. Well, once capital freezes, you only have a matter of days or weeks to really sort of unravel that, because without capital flowing, without functioning financial markets, food trucks don't roll, ships don't go, nobody knows who, the payment systems are wrecked. That's the kind of chaos I'm talking about. And in this next round, if things get out of control and the financial markets break and they get ugly, I'm looking at closed markets, really giant losses, sovereign failures. So start with Greece and start with Venezuela, but once Greece goes, there's no way the Italian banking system survives. And if that doesn't survive, you can just kiss off basically Europe's banking system. That kind of ugly. So I understand why they're working so hard to keep everything propped up. Now, that's great. Sounds scary. What do you do about it? So peak prosperity, we have three big buckets we work in. One is called knowing. So this is the information that people need to understand what's happening. So if you understand banking and you understand energy and you understand these pieces and you get that, you can kind of see into this and go, oh, future is going to be really different than the past, maybe ugly different. Knowing has to connect to doing, though. Knowing is useless unless you're going to do something with it. I don't want just people to get nervous. I want them to do something about it. So there we have a model for thinking about how to become more resilient. And it's based around the idea that there are actually eight forms of capital that if you have them all, you're much more resilient, more prepared than somebody who only has one or even none of these forms of capital. Financial capital, that's the first one. But we also have an obvious one. People get that. But social capital, really actually very important, both to your current happiness, but also your future thriving. Emotional capital, also important. Your living capital, that's the health of your body and the health of the world around you. So I got a really nice garden, got chickens, got orchard, got bee stuff. I mean, I'm as healthy as I know how to be. So I'm advancing these different forms of capital because I think there's this really uncertain future. There's a way to step through that. But here's the good part in the story. If I do all this stuff and the future doesn't break, no problems. I've been absolutely wrong about the market instability. The worst that's going to happen is I'm going to find myself as having saved a bunch of money, had made some really appropriate investments that are not Wall Street based. I'm going to be healthier. I'm going to have better friendships. I'm going to be really living in a more complete sort of a way. So the invitation in this crisis I see coming is for people to break out of their slumber and get busy with really engaging with life again in a really important way. Look at what has happened to our country, right? Come on, can we fix this? Opioid epidemics, addiction rates, and deaths have now surpassed the deaths from heroin overdose and whatnot, surpassed gun deaths, right? More people are committing suicide. I mean, there's just all these signs to say people are stressed, they're unhappy, and I think we can do something about that.
Interesting. Okay. Very. So you're talking about balance in your life, but capital, okay, as you describe it, very interesting and very well said too. And of course, there's spiritual health in there as well. We have to balance everything with our belief in God and trust in God.
I know we touched on this a little bit before the we went on air. You asked what would our audience be interested in hearing about. And one thing I know we do get a lot of emails about, especially when we get into some of the financial talk, is the housing market. Since 08, we saw the housing market bubble collapse, and prices have really, it seems like we've bounced back. Yet at the same time, we continue to hear that there are a number of indicators out there that show just like it was before the 2008 collapse. And people are concerned that we're going to see a repeat of what happened in 08. What's your take on the current situation in the housing market?
Well, it's been reinflated, specifically as a consequence of Fed policy. They're very proud of themselves for having done this. I understand their strategy. Their strategy was, if people have more equity in their homes, then they'll borrow against that. Because again, this is all about how do we encourage people to borrow more. The Fed doesn't really care if your house is worth more or not. But when you peel it back, it's not hard to figure out that actually rising house prices aren't good for anybody except a really tiny minority of people who sell their house and then move to a lower priced area and pocket those gains. Everybody else, you know what else happened? 2016, highest property taxes in all of U.S. history, scooted up by another $16 billion to $540 billion last year. Is that a good thing? Well, Janet Yellen thinks so, and the Fed thinks so, but for people who are faced with rising property taxes due to the fact that their house is worth more, are out $16 billion they could have spent on something else additional last year. And also your insurance rates go up and all that. But look at the young people in this story again. Those first-time homebuyers priced out of these markets. There's no chance. The median income required to buy the median house in San Francisco now is somewhere around $125,000. Right. Nobody's earning. So again, we've seen these bubbles come out. As bad as they are here in the U.S., in certain markets worse than others, obviously, Canada's way over the tips of its skis. Canada's going to have a really hard time coming up at some point with the average house price, average in Toronto, north of $1 million, right? Come on. That's crazy talk. And so we've seen this again and again. It all happens because bubbles aren't these things that arise out of nowhere. They happen because of policies. So the Federal Reserve blew a big bubble that burst in 2000. They blew an even bigger one that burst in 2007 and 8, and then they've blown an even larger one again. So my view on housing is that it's very much due for a correction. Now, that's my sense, but I was just at a real estate investor conference. A lot of people there who are involved in multifamily housing and commercial. Both of those tribes of people think that we're very late in cycle. They're busy skinnying down their portfolios. And these are people who might manage or own or be responsible for 10, 20, 30,000 units. So they're pretty big players. And of course, they say, listen, once the cap rate, meaning the amount of return you're going to get on something, gets down below 5%, you really have trouble on your hands. We're down at 3.5%. And the dumb money has started to wander into the story, meaning insurance companies are like, well, our cost of capital is 1%, so we're going to go buy an office building that's yielding 3.5%. Looks like a win to us, but really you can't make money at those rates. So my view is real estate's gone too far. It's been pushed there aggressively by the Federal Reserve that, again, was banking everything on rapid economic growth returning. It's been missing for over 10 years. It's not here this year. It wasn't here last year or the year before, and I don't think it's coming back for other reasons for a long time. So the model just doesn't work.
Interesting. We only have about 2.5 minutes before or 2 minutes before the break. Well, on the other side of the break, I want to ask you or if you can address this. Back, I think it was 2011, sometime in there, I wrote an article called "We're Just Going to Kill the Dollar." And this was an article that got a lot of traction, and in fact, somebody made a YouTube video about it, and that got a lot of traction. But we're just going to kill the dollar, and this was a statement made by someone inside D.C., inside the money, one of the money making policymakers inside D.C. We're just going to kill the dollar, and I remember that, and I remember people saying, "Yeah, that's really, I mean, that's what it's all about. They want to kill the dollar." And take it down. And I want to know if that's kind of, in your view, still operative, and if that's their ultimate objective is to kill the U.S. dollar, especially meaning as the world's reserve currency, I suppose, and which would just upend our country. Is that possible? Is that one of the objectives? You can go ahead and take us out. We're talking to Chris Martinson from peakprosperity.com. And visit his website, by the way, peakprosperity.com. That's peakprosperity.com.
I was just reading navigating through the website, and part of there, there's a drop down menu on the top,
right?
That, and one of the drop down options is discuss, and this is a forum that is on Chris's website, and they got a number of interesting topics from, you know, farming to precious metals, alternative energy.
I learned a
energy.
Lot from this.
And, yeah, there's a lot there. I love forums because I love how it gives people the opportunity to post, you know, their own personal opinions and experiences with things that they know. You know, not that this is part of our show or segment tonight, but a great thing for forums is recipes, finding recipes on forums. You find some really good stuff there. But this forum is more for people who want to talk about the ins and outs of the different... from preparedness to financial to current events and news. It's interesting. It's something I'm going to continue to look at. So
absolutely.
I'm going to bookmark the site, peakprosperity.com. Peakprosperity.com. There is all the different resources that you can find there, from taking action to books. And even when we come back, we're going to hear about the video that Chris made. And
I got
a crash course.
We got to ask about killing a dollar, though, too.
Yeah, and the killing of a dollar.
Right.
We'll be right back after these short messages with Chris Martinson of peakprosperity.com. Don't go anywhere.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric said...
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trading Post in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changepersonwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back. back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are talking with Chris Martinson of peakprosperity.com. That's peakprosperity.com. And bookmark that website and navigate through it and check out all the interesting resources and content that it offers. Chris, during the break, we were talking about something very interesting. You mentioned the rising cost of healthcare and how the insurance companies were making, you know, just a ton of money, making a killing, under the Obamacare. And if we can segue into, we see that the cost of living continues to rise, and, you know, different things like the health insurance and, you mentioned like the rent and how, mortgage prices and housing prices, how they're, you know, continuing to rise, making property taxes and other things more expensive. The one thing we don't see rising is the value of the dollar and wages. How long can we continue to see, and as you rightly described, you know, the middle class and everybody from there down is getting crushed under the weight of this economy. How long can we continue to be sustainable in a country where the wages are not rising as the cost of everything else continues to rise?
I think it's kind of the pace of change, you know. So I've been surprised that people have been as calm as they've been. You know, in Europe we see more riots and things like that, where people, you know, understand they have power and try and express it. But in this country, as a matter of policy, the middle class on down has been tossed under the bus. And in response to that, you see an increasing police state and militarization, which is what you need if you're going to grind people. You kind of have to keep them under control. You know, I think where this kind of broke open for me was after the Ferguson riots, you know, in Ferguson, Missouri, after that Michael Brown shooting, you know, the cop shot the black kid. So there was all this unrest, and the media was like, oh, my God, you know, look at all these terrible people just rioting, and oh, my gosh, these black people are destroying their own communities. But then a report came out that said in a town of 20,000 people, there were 16,000 outstanding warrants for arrest for things like what was called obstructing pedestrian traffic, which meant if you stopped for too long in the sidewalk, you got a ticket, and if you couldn't pay it, you got a warrant. I was like, wow, that's kind of, wait a minute, not one banker goes to jail, not one senior banker goes to jail for committing massive felonies, right? The robo-signing scandal at Bank of America, where people signing signatures in a little box that says it's a felony to forge a signature. They committed wire fraud, theft, you name it. If that was you or me doing that on our own, or we were Wells Fargo's opening up fake bank accounts and stuffing money into it and siphoning it out, that's also a form of fraud, we'd be in jail, right? So that part, when I say I think the middle class on down is getting crushed, I mean, it's pretty across the board. And wages have been a big part of that story. Systemically, through the Federal Reserve and other policies put out by Washington, we've decided that we're going to live in a country with like really awesome healthcare expenditures, like, you know, double what anybody else pays, really good environmental rules, really nice workplace rules, because we want a clean, safe country and we like all that. But we're also going to have free trade, which means we're now in competition with China, who has none of those rules, right, and is able to compete much more aggressively on labor. So the fact that we've had like declining labor wage increases in this country is a matter of policy. You can't have free trade and extensive government rules at home and have rising wages. It just doesn't work, right? So whenever a politician comes out and says, I think Americans need to be better trained for the new workplace, it's out there, I'm like, no, we don't. We just need a level playing field, right? It's been absolutely grotesquely tilted in the favor of corporations who own the politicians. So this whole thing is just very unjust. And for anybody who's listening, you know, no surprise that Donald Trump won, and it should be no surprise when Marine Le Pen wins similarly in France, or it shouldn't have been a surprise that Brexit happened, or, trust me, a dozen other soon-to-happen political upheavals, because people don't like things to be unfair. They're really unfair right now. And not by accident either. They're unfair because people made them that way. And I think that's not what this country was founded on. It's not what we stand for. It's not fair. It's not right. It's all that stuff. So we really need a reset in this story.
All right. And if, wow, very very good, very interesting answer, deep answer, too, as I looked, as I considered your response. But before the break, I had written back in 2013, an article saying that we're just going to kill the dollar. This was based on an interview that, economist Kyle Bass had with a senior Obama administration official. And it was my understanding based on that interview, although I don't know for certain, it was the Treasury Secretary at the time back in 2011 who said we're just going to kill the dollar. And now, to me, and I wrote back in 2013 that explains certainly everything we've been seeing domestically and globally. It makes every other question irrelevant or otherwise, answers, you know, all economic questions and explains anything, that we're seeing, because at the root of everything, monetary is money, essentially. I mean, follow the money. Are they going to kill the dollar, U.S. dollar? Are we not going to be the world reserve currency? Is that what they're planning? What are they planning? When I say the globalists.
I don't know yet. So first, kill the dollar, you have to ask against what, right? So would the dollar fall in value against the euro, the yen, the yuan, the Canadian dollar? It would have to fall in value against the other currencies. And so every other country in this story is busy trying to make sure their currency is cheaper than everybody else's. So think of it like all the world's currency are skydivers, right? They've all fallen, they're all out of the plane and the chutes aren't open and they're all trying to sink a little faster than the next guy. Because if your currency gets really strong, that really hurts your exporters and it creates a lot of difficulty and capital flows into your country and that creates trouble with interest rates. It creates a lot of trouble. So everybody's trying to weaken their currency at the same time. Now, the United States has had an exorbitant privilege. We've exported a lot of dollars. There's about 7 trillion of them hanging out overseas. And so my model for what might trigger the dollar to really decline, because it should, because if all those dollars said, wait a minute, United States, we don't believe in your story. We want our money back. What would they do with them? Well, they'd have to buy something with those dollars, maybe another currency, but maybe they'd have to buy something in this country. There's just not 7 trillion bucks worth of stuff on for sale. So there would be a rapid destruction in the perceived and even absolute value of dollars. But I don't know what would trigger that and make that fall really start. But there's so many out there. Think of it like a snow cornice, right? It just needs one more snowflake. It might fall. It could fall very quickly. And so, you know, here's something that I think could trigger it. If the United States gets in a military conflict with not a little tiny country, but say somebody like Russia, and it's discovered that, oh, wait, a real adversary can actually give us some trouble, that might prick the bubble of invincibility of the power of the United States military. If that happens, who knows what would happen next at that point. But, you know, the subtext to this story, the thing that's really got me, had my attention for about 5 years now, is that gold still plays an important monetary role. And the West, which includes Europe and the United States, has been perfectly happy to be selling its gold from the peak of $1,900 in 2011 all the way down to just around $1,000 as of last year, you know, back up around $1,250, $1,270 today, or even higher today. So watching that, though, what's been amazing is the amount of gold that we can track that's leaving the West and going east. It's almost like we don't care in the West. Like, we're willing to part with the gold, but China and India, China alone last year almost bought close to 100% of world mine output, which means all the other gold that was picked up by Russia, South America, India had to come out of vaults in the West. So that's coming out of London. I think it's coming out of the United States. We won't admit it yet, but there's just no way. See, this is the fun thing about gold. You can't print it out of thin air. You know, a unit is a unit. So if we see the import statistics from China and India, I know it came from somewhere. And so we have to guess next, because the funny thing in this story is you can go online and find plans for a nuclear bomb if you want, but you can't find out how much gold the countries in the West actually hold, because they will not release that information. That's some of the most closely guarded information that currently exists in the system.
Isn't that interesting? That's very telling, by the way. Well, okay, since we're on this subject, because anytime we have anyone talking about the economy on, we always get the questions. Should we be buying gold and silver? Should we be hanging on to the gold and silver we have? And of course, without respect to, or perhaps with respect to dollar cost averaging, how you got it, whatever, or if you are intending to buy it, should people buy gold and silver precious metals today? Is it, if it was good at 30 for silver, an ounce of silver, for example, it's even better today. The same with gold. What's your take on the precious metals?
Oh, absolutely. If you do not have any precious metals in your portfolio, I don't care what the price is or whether it's trending up or down, get some, put them in there. And minimum 10% of your portfolio, but maybe higher. And then you might consider averaging in more over time, because they are volatile sort of things, and who can predict where they're going to go. But here's the larger story. When I said we're printing debt like crazy all across the globe, and we have, right? I think global debt was standing at about $157 trillion in 2007. Today it's about $240 trillion. I mean, think that through. It took all of world history to 2007 to get to $157 trillion, and it just took another 8 years or 9 years to basically add another 35% to that number. It's just astonishing. Well, what's debt? Well, debt's just a claim on future money, right? So, you know, if I have a debt on my car, I have a car payment. Like, I don't owe all $30,000 today, but every month I got to, you know, shell out $400, you know. So that debt, that car debt, is a claim on those $400 monthly payments all the way out in the future. And what's money? Well, money is a claim on real stuff. Money isn't actually wealth. Money has value because I can walk into a store and buy something or give it to you, and you can do that. So what we have to be careful about in this story is that the claims are climbing like crazy, but the real stuff that they're claiming on is not. And those, historically, they've gotten out of balance before. Happened between 1918 and 1923 in Weimar, Germany, and we have all those pictures of people carrying wheelbarrows of currency to try and buy a loaf of bread, or stuffing the currency wads into their furnace because, heck, it was cheaper than firewood on a cost basis to just burn the paper. That happened because too many claims got printed against too little stuff. And so we've been here before, and so my prediction is that there will come a time when all of those claims, it's like a game of musical chairs, and all of a sudden people go, ah, and they freak out, and they all try and rush back over to real stuff. So gold and silver are on the correct side of the real stuff line. I'm advising people to not have all your money out here in the paper world and start moving it over into real estate, productive real estate, particular timberland, farmland, cash-flowing real rental properties, real wealth, because you want to be on this side of the line, because every time in history when we've gone through this period, the media says, oh, it was a wealth destruction. Who could have foreseen the stock market falling 80% or the dollar losing 90% of its value? Oh, you know, it wasn't a wealth destruction. It's a wealth transfer. Because the real wealth, which is the property, plant, equipment, gold, silver, tangible things, that changes hands big time when you go through one of these periods of wealth destruction. So that, again, the media will do a great disservice trying to convince people that nobody could have foreseen this and just happened. You know, I was a guy who was shorting the housing bubble all the way down because it was that obvious. This is that obvious. You just can't print faster then real stuff is growing. One of these two things has to correct. It's never the real stuff. The claims get crunched. And so my advice to people at this particular moment, have some gold and silver, sit on as much cash as you can right now, because there's a timing to all of this, and be ready with a list of things that you would love to own if you could, but at a much better price. There will come this crunch. You want to rush over with whatever cash you've got and start buying things. I've got a little nice little buy list. Ooh, I'd like to have that property if I could, or whatever. And then we get to the last act in the story, which is when the central banks really freak out and just start printing, not just to the banks, though. You'll get a check for $50,000. Maybe the Treasury will say you have a total tax holiday this year. I don't know how they're going to do it. But that's when they print for Main Street. And that's when we go into the last act, which is finally the destruction of the currency systems involved. And oh, by the way, the only thing that's different this time in the story is we're trying it globally when we only used to try it in individual countries before.
That's frightening to think about. You mentioned that when you get into these kind of discussions, you don't always just like to talk about the problems. You're a co-author of a book with Adam Taggart, Prosper, How to Prepare for the Future and Create a World Worth Inheriting. Could we go over a few things that people can do to prepare themselves and to not only be more prepared, but not fall victim? And, you know, as you just stated, you know, have cash on hand, have gold. But some of the other things, you know, remaining healthy in a, you know, in these times. You mentioned you have a garden. What are some things that are in your book that you can help people understand, you know, some of the things that they can do to make these times and the times that are to come that are going to be much harder a little bit easier?
Well, sure. So this is where my real passion lies is because, again, all I care about is what do we do? My mission is to create a world worth inheriting. I'd much rather leave a better one behind than a worse one. And so, again, we've organized that book around the idea that there are these eight different forms of capital. So financial capital, just to start there, you know, our view is a lot of people have money in the markets. That's great. But set a piece of that, like some whole percentage that you are going to dedicate to investing in these other forms of capital. Let's build them up. So here's a very specific example. I took some financial capital and I put solar thermal panels on my roof that just heats water up. Nothing sexy about it. Just a box with pipes and a little circulating pump and a hot water tank. And that investment, because I did that, that is going to, I'll always have hot water no matter what happens. And secondarily, this thing is going to save me a ton of money. It has about an 8-year payback. It's a 25-year lifespan system if I maintain it. So it has an internal rate of return of well over 100%. Try getting that out of Wall Street, guaranteed, by the way. So these, we have examples of things like that where people can take some financial capital and rethink investment and move it over and invest in yourself. So you can invest in your house, better insulating, better energy systems, things that will reduce future cash flow payments that make sense. You can put it in a spreadsheet, good stuff. Or you can invest in your own health. It sometimes takes a little capital to get there. And so do that. Or last year I spent about $1,000 on compost, big truck rolls up, rich black substance. I then make my soils richer and healthier. It builds up the living capital in my garden and yard. My family eats really healthy food. We grow about 4, maybe 5% of the calories that my family eats. I'm not a subsistence farmer, but under certain circumstances, if the future gets really uncertain, that could actually become a much larger percentage or maybe even all of what my family eats. I don't know. But for now, it gives me happiness. And it takes a dedication, though, to say, let go of some of that financial capital and start maneuvering it into these other forms of capital. Some you can buy, some you can't. And by the way, the most important form of capital out of all of them is emotional capital, which encompasses spiritual as well. So we know now that people who fall to pieces or can't manage their emotional state when times get hard, they get tunnel vision, they get frozen, they can't move, they can't make decisions, they feel pity instead of movement. You know, these people do very poorly. And so one of the sayings I have is the next financial crisis isn't going to harm people, but their response to it will. So we saw this when the former USSR, it breaks up, right, in 1989. In the next 8 years in Russia, 54% of all deaths in that country were due to alcohol. And I raise this because that was an economic superpower, and it collapsed, and we saw what happened. A lot of people just drank themselves right to death. And that was a really explosive period of new capital formation in Russia for people who could see it. The people who couldn't see it had the pity party, felt bad because they lost their job, mostly middle-aged men, by the way, lost their job, felt they couldn't provide, couldn't protect, felt bad and drank instead of saying, what's the new opportunity? How do we live into it? What do we do? So in this story, I told you a lot of scary stuff. There's challenges coming. Some stuff is going to go away, and I good riddance for some of it, but there's going to be an equal amount of new opportunity coming, but only for those who can get there and see it. So in the financial capital, we have a whole section on become an entrepreneur. Don't have a single income stream. Figure out where you really add value. Don't work on your weaknesses. Hire people who are your weaknesses. And really begin to think about how you're going to create and get to your own financial freedom, because that's possible. But working for a single job, single paycheck in an exposed industry, you know, that's a roll of the dice in this world as far as I'm concerned. So that's kind of our, you know, a lot of advice like that, just to give you a few pieces of that. But it's all very concrete, very direct. And if people do it, again, I sleep well at night. I feel really good about myself. I love the mission that I've got in this world. The money follows that, not the other way around. And I would just love, I love sharing this with people because the thousands of people we've managed to reach, lots of feedback saying, I was scared at first. I took these steps. I am so glad that I started to go this way because it's really about taking responsibility and control for what you can back into your life. And I think that's something that people hunger for and it's been very positive so far.
Yeah, I believe the people right now, there's a lot of fear, and the fear paralyzes. What you said, folks, what he said, simple as that. There. To me, that's the answer. Listen to him. There it is. We can take, we need that, we need to be responsible for our own actions, and he just told you how, basically. Hey, we got about 8 minutes left.
5 minutes.
Or 5 minutes left. The floor is yours. Take it wherever you want to take it. Including your website and books, anything.
Well, sure. So, peakprosperity.com has been my heart and my soul. Adam Taggart and I, we run that. It's mostly free information. We do have a subscription newsletter for people who like to go a little deeper or, you know, I'm analyzing, I'm reading, you know, people ask me, what do I really do in my job? And I say, well, I read. That's what I mostly do. Just to try and stay abreast of everything that's happening and synthesize it and then present it to people. So we have that newsletter. But the website is really organized around trying to get people to see things a little bit differently, very solutions oriented. It's just no good to just sit down and go, oh, this is all crazy crap, right? Nope. You know, notice that, but move to action as soon as you can. And by the way, so for those people who are feeling fear, I'll submit to you, here's why it's happening. If you know this, but your actions are here, anxiety and fear live in that gap between those two things, right? So if I lived on an earthquake on the San Andreas Fault and I had taken no steps to be self-reliant, I didn't even spend the $100 to have a 72-hour emergency kit in a closet somewhere, I'd feel awful about that. Even if I wasn't paying conscious attention to it, somewhere down there I'd have that anxiety nibbling at my brain stem and it would give me a lower quality of life. So I'm like, well then fix it. There's so many things people can do to minimize their anxiety, but it's not going to come from the outside. It comes from the inside. It comes from you deciding that you're going to take that responsibility and do something about it. And everybody can do something about it. I don't care if you're consider yourself poor and living in an urban area. Everybody can do something, and we all need to start doing this. So, Prosper is the book. Crash Course is a book. We have the free video series online. If you want to look for it, the shortest one we've got, and we're working on shorter versions, but the shortest version we have is called the Accelerated Crash Course. And if you click on that, you can get a much more comprehensive picture of everything I'm talking about. But again, stop watching as soon as you go. That's as much information as I need to move to action. Want to watch the whole thing? Great. That's not enough. We have a 4.5-hour long crash course. You need that and more? Great. We got more stuff. How much do you need? But just, it's time. It's time. You can feel it. It's, things are falling apart. They'll reform. But if you are not prepared mentally and physically and financially, you're going to find it much harder than it needs to be. And I plan to thrive through this next period. I'm not surviving. I'm thriving through this, and my family's going to come out better than before. And you know, that's my plan. I might be wrong, but I'm not confused. So,
for many, it's going to be a bumpy ride. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, there will be people caught in the crossfire and people in the direct line of fire. There will, to me, I believe there's going to be some chaos and civil disruptions and civil unrest and such that we've already seen, but it's going to be that on steroids. But getting out of the way of that, and then while being out of the way, being able to not just survive, but as you said, thrive. And I think that's important to do that because we don't have to all be victims. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
The victim mentality. All right, my friend. Wow. Share this segment with people, with your families and friends. I believe this was, this is perhaps one of the most important segments that we've had with respect to being proactive. And you're a great, teacher of that. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And hopefully we can do this again in the future. Folks, our guest is Chris Martinson. His website is peakprosperity.com. That's peakprosperity.com. And again, check out the book Prosper, How to Prepare for the Future and Create a World Worth Inheriting. Also, there's a newsletter on peakprosperity.com. Enter your email address and get the newsletter. And there's also a login and register function on the site. So if you like what you see and you're interested in wanting to learn more, make sure you sign up on the website, peakprosperity.com. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward
thank
to having you,
gentlemen.
In the future.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure.
All right. Wow, that was great. I mean, folks, peakprosperity.com, bookmark that website, visit that website, take advantage of that. You just heard a fascinating segment with him, I believe. And
one of the more important messages to take away from this is something that a number of people who deal in the economic world and paying attention to trends and whatnot is that there is opportunity even in
terrible
times in our economy, whether it's a housing collapse or an economic correction or crash. There are places that you can, as Chris said, thrive.
Yep.
In these times, you just have to know where to look and to know what you're doing. Folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these short messages. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate a maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.